This little bell, not sure what it's for. I like it.
I'm done. I could say, you know, in view of the fact I don't like what we're talking about, I'm out. I could do that. Oh, okay. That was a sound check. Yeah, okay, good. Good. I'm a sound chick, kind of.
Sound chick. Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week has, as my family would say, a great face for radio. You've likely heard her voice as Natasha in the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie, or in Peabody and Sherman, or on Animaniacs, Rugrats, or the Justice League cartoons. I've watched all of those things. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and acsdigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is actor, comedian, and storyteller, Laurie Frazier. Hi there.
Hi there, Denzel.
When you just smile, we can't hear you.
I know. Well, I never heard all those things in a row before. It sounds like someone I don't even know.
But they're all true, right?
They are.
You must have heard that voice, that joke about you have a great face for radio.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You have a cousin in radio, and so my uncle always says that about him. Now, you have a lot of stuff going on in your life, blah, blah, blah. But you've done all this animated stuff. Did you watch cartoons as a kid? Did you have some favorite cartoons?
I lived them. Yeah, I had some favorite. I love the Jetsons, always the Jetsons. And I loved TC, Top Cat.
Top Cat.
I love Top Cat. Hey, TC, I love Top Cat. And I loved Rocky and Bullwinkle, loved Fractured Fairy Tales,
yes.
and all the Hanna-Barbera and the Warner Brother cartoons and the Looney Tunes, and I loved even that crow, ba-dum, 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 and he'd hop and he'd go, that little crow,
yes.
And it really bugged me a little bit, but I was fascinated. Heckle and Jekyll, I just liked them all.
Yeah, that wasn't Heckle and Jekyll. The crow.
No, it wasn't. The crow wasn't.
Warner Brothers.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm.
Right? And he was really dumb.
Yeah, and he just kind
of. He was a vulture.
I'm not sure. No, that was another one. That was the vulture.
Yeah, he was.
But
really
this
dumb.
One was this. He just kind of hopped. He did one, two, three, and a hop.
Yeah. And the music goes. Along
and the music
that.
Goes. Yeah.
Boop, 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 yeah.
And I just love. Yeah, I just loved cartoons. Animation was. Is everything, yeah. You know?
And with you do all these voices, you have all these voices. When did you start to figure out that that was a thing you liked or could do?
I think when I was a real little kid, I was a pretty good mimic of the people in the family. So that's how usually it starts, you know.
My grandmother would come over and she'd say, "Oh, look at you. You've gained some weight since last time, my little fatso."
And so those words go deep and you remember not just the words, but the voice.
Unfortunately, they do, yeah.
Yeah. And my father would always say, "Life is wonderful. It's fantastic." So you learn to stretch your words and in animation, wow, you know. Help, you know, and you're, so I got into that. And then I think it's just because I lived in a fantasy world. And so you could always make up. And I had voices, you know, talking to me in my head.
Yeah.
So
you had a good fantasy life as a kid?
A pretty good one, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would start putting my voice to objects, like a candy bar, you know.
Oh, like what is the candy bar?
Oh, the candy bar would say, you know, Hi.
Come on, I want to go home with you. And I promise I won't make a mess, and I promise I won't get your shirt dirty. You can just eat me up and I'll disappear.
And it was just like, "Mom, and Mom, can I have one of those?" And then I'd hear, "Oh, you're a little fatso, so..."
So you have all these voices in your head arguing and talking to each other.
Well, arguing. My parents argued a lot. My mother would scream, and my mom was, she was frustrated, but she would kind of throw the pots and pans and my dad would catch them and put them away. Well, that was like, from one side and then, you know, "Ooh, good throw," you know? And so you got this back and forth, and that's cartoons. That was always cartoons. "Shall we? Surely. Oh, after you. Oh, no, I couldn't. Oh, you must. Oh, no, I couldn't. Oh, no, no." Right,
that's
right.
Like Chip and Dale. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And so
wait, now I have this image of your mother enraged, throwing pots and pans, and your father catching them and making a joke about it, saying, "Oh, good throw, darling."
Good throw, right? And she was absolutely
that must have made her much more angry.
Yeah. Angry. Yeah, exactly. So we were really good at, you know, let's just. And then of course she would change. My dad never got screamy like that. He would just kind of disappear. It's, "Oh, your mother's, you know, hasn't had her orange juice, so I think I'm going to go to work for a little while." So sometimes, but my mother would be, they were both kind of imaginative, and my mother would be, "Oh, darling, and what would you like to do for your birthday this year?" You know, and you just never knew. The next minute it could be, "What?" You know, and that's cartoons. So
that
I kind of guess, wow, I question, did I live in a cartoon when I was little?
Did you live in a cartoon?
Who knows? I did. I had a pretty good time.
It sounds like
I had a good childhood.
You had fun.
Whether I was aware of it or not, it was pretty good.
Whatever.
Yeah, and I had good foot parents, so I was lucky there.
Yeah, you had fun. It sounds like that.
Yeah.
How was this thing on Rocky and Bullwinkle? That short. That's kind of the most recent thing that you've done. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is recent.
Yeah. How was that? It's a DreamWorks.
It's fantastic. DreamWorks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it was fantastic. It's now. Okay, so let's see. I should straighten things up because there was been lots of versions of Rocky and Bullwinkle or
over
several.
The years.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so, yes. And so I had done a Natasha, and then there was another Natasha. And then, you know, I've been very fortunate enough to be able to do some of the June Foray voices. And so there's a few of us out there that do that. And so
I don't know what that means. What does that
June Foray, of course, was Rocky and Natasha. And she's, you know, so many characters. The Fractured Fairy Tales, the list for June. She was, in Tweety Bird. She just has so many. And she's responsible for creating a lot of characters. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to mimic some of those. So that gave me the opportunity to do a couple of games here and a couple of, you know, fill-ins. Because she's in her 90s now, and she's still just, you know, she's amazing.
Right.
She's amazing. As are a lot of the
voiceover. So you're doing like that, for example, you obviously didn't create Natasha.
Right, so I didn't
Cattell.
Create. Right.
I had to look up. I was like, does she have a last name? She does.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what it was.
Isn't that great? And Nogudnik.
Fatal,
I know.
But I like the
Nogudnik.
I like that.
Boris Nogudnik. Yes,
yeah, I like that's a better name.
Yes.
Boris Badenov and Natasha.
Like Nogudnik. It's wonderful.
Prefer that.
But it's wonderful because anytime you get to work with at a place like DreamWorks, it is a dream. Because you're in a sound studio that's not a closet. It's amazing. And it's air conditioned, and they have water for you and stuff. And they know exactly what they're doing, what they want. And it's really it was really a dream, you know. I could have gotten up every day and gone to DreamWorks, but they didn't open the door the day after when I tried to come back.
Yeah, that's good.
So.
Yeah, but it's fun. I love Rocky and Bullwinkle. I still do. Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Okay.
And and every time when he says that, "Not again," you know, he's just so kind of like, come on, do I have to have this guy as my friend? He's my bear. Look at Chester. He's looking at me. So, yeah.
Now I'm noticing, because we just met.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm noticing some stuff. And I notice that there are moments when you shift into an animated voice. Just as you talking, there are moments when you want to say something or express something, and you go to an animated voice instead of just speaking to me as a human being. And I'm just curious, maybe you've noticed, maybe you haven't, you probably have, but...
it's probably...
What changes for you? Something changes.
It's probably because I can hear the... it can be boring just listening to the... You know, it's just... I have the ability to change it up a bit, why don't I?
You do.
Out of respect to you, you know, and out of a courtesy of, it's more interesting to listen to somebody who all of a sudden, things change, and then the person kind of leans in. Maybe they're not listening. This is kind of monotone after a while.
Yeah.
Anyway, now let me tell you where I went. So I turned right, and then I made a U-turn. Oh, now the person's listening.
The story gets more excited.
So maybe, who knows, you know, it all comes from someplace, so maybe I wasn't heard, now I want to be heard, or maybe, who knows?
Sure.
That was a good question.
I notice I have some guys that come out. One is kind of a Spanish guy or Argentinian guy at certain times.
Okay, perfect.
One is a kind of like a stuffy nose guy like
that's
this.
That's a good one. Yeah, very good.
And so over time, I'm noticing, though, that those voices come out when I have certain kinds of things to say or certain attitudes. And that, you know, so I'm...
That's very astute because I have Arlene. She comes out every now and then. Oh, sometimes she can say things that I really... It doesn't say, I can't say.
You wouldn't
say.
You
know? Yeah, I wouldn't say, oh, stop, please. But she, oh, stop, please. It gets the message, it's short, and I can easily go, oh, my God, Arlene, that is just so awful to say that. He's trying his best to be, you know, interesting, and the fact that he's just, you know, oh, stop, please.
Really?
Really.
Really? Yeah. This is the best he can do? Come on.
Yeah.
Please. Give me a break.
Yeah, they help us, don't they, those voices?
I think so. I think they do. Now, I want to change things up. Are you you also have been doing hair for a long time.
I'm a long-time hairdresser.
Long-time hairdresser.
Having the honor of being a hairdresser. Yeah. Yeah. For more than one decade, yes.
Now, the question here, though, for me, is there are things that you've learned doing hair that also apply to being an actor or being a storyteller? I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I think that these things are totally different, but they're both in you, so maybe there are some things that apply on both sides of the aisle.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, isn't there, you interview a lot of people, so any creative endeavor that you have in your life can, by doing what you do every day, influences. You can grab from this, from anything, and put them into your creations that you do outside of this podcast, right?
I don't know. Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
I'm a plumber,
oh, no, I think
and
it's
fair. I do a podcast, you know, yeah. So that's my thing. Would
now,
any things
might
that,
be...
that go that you can use on both sides of this
yeah,
in
well,
hair
you know what?
And in entertainment.
Yes. Because everybody's different, every person's different, and they all have personalities and nuances. So for acting, you're looking at the nuances and the gradation of their tones in their voice. For voiceover, you're looking how I'm listening to how they speak, how they draw you in. Some people can draw you in being very slow and deliberate, and you find yourself listening, you're waiting for the next, okay. Other people can be very staccato in their voice, and they're very, you know, so those differences are, I can bring into the studio, that's great. The other thing is,
so that is, you listen to people talk who are your hair clients.
Yeah.
You steal their,
well,
or borrow, you know, you
I
take,
borrow
you
sometimes,
stuff from
I yeah. hybrid. I never just
sure.
take 100%.
No, I understand. But you get stuff from listening to different people. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Or the way that they can, especially the way they can put together a sentence and just how they, their own instrument. It's fascinating to me. Also, the mirror is, well, as a hairdresser, the mirror is a window to the soul. So I will see things that the client doesn't see because they are looking in a mirror for the first time, maybe in a month, a week. Maybe they just go by in the morning, they go like this to their hair and they leave. Maybe they stare for a long time. I don't know. But to sit in front of a mirror without your texting, without a newspaper, and you're just sitting there because they have a choice. They can do whatever they want.
Sure.
Some of them are just fascinated with this being staring back at them, and they are just fascinated. A lot of times clients will talk to me but never take their eyes off of themselves, and they don't know they're doing this. They talk just like it's in the mirror, and they're fascinated with themselves, but it's not fascinated with an ego. It's just like, wow,
what is that?
Yeah. And while they're talking to me, so I told my mom, they're watching their face move, and so that's very helpful because that shows there's a vulnerability. And I don't steal that from them. I just learn from watching.
Sure.
That what
so now
if I
get
was...
This, yeah, I get this image of them. You're watching them in the mirror watching themselves.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I bet it is revealing.
And it's very it's very important that it's an honorable thing. I'm very honored that people are, whether they know it or not, that they trust in me enough to do that. That's huge. So therefore, all kinds of emotions, because I'm an emotional being, so all kinds of emotions come into play that surprise me. And those subtle, that subtlety of emotion, that's what you can bring to a performance to make you different than everybody else, because you're not looking for a subtle emotion, you're remembering. And so that's, you know, whatever, that's method, I guess. So
this is all stuff that
you're
noticing when you're doing hair.
Absolutely. And then it's my job, of course, to make you look beautiful and love the way you look when you leave. And that is another honor. Yeah. So, you know, you learn a lot when someone bears their soul to you. You know what I mean?
Well, you don't have to, but it sounds like you are. You're doing that. Yeah.
Sure.
How old were you when you first ran away from home?
Let's see. I think my mother did. So she was pregnant.
Your mother ran away when she was pregnant with you?
I decided at 8 months. Oh, dear, I made a mistake. This is an awful mistake. And then she came back. So I guess that wouldn't count. So I would say
she was running away then from your dad. Or
whatever. I don't know, because I was inside.
She ran away.
But,
no, let's not count that.
Let's not count. Yeah. So the first, how old was I when I first ran away from home? I was a real responsible kid. So I raised my parents, and when they were old enough, I left the house.
So you raised them?
I think pretty much so. because I had a brother and sister and a grandfather. So somebody had to be responsible. My parents were responsible, but they both worked. And so I couldn't run away because my brother and sister were home. My grandfather was there. I couldn't really run away. However,
You could have run away. People run away for their own reasons, but you felt a responsibility.
Yes, but I will tell you something, because I'm no Pollyanna here. I escaped. I had a bedroom window that I would sneak out of, and then sneak back into. Yeah, and I would sneak out, and that was during my teens. So I don't think I escaped. You know, remember something too. You didn't really have to run away, since my parents were so creative and out there themselves. You go to the living room and set up a tent, and they would be, you know, where'd you go?
So there was it was no like need to run away.
I could go to the backyard and in a tent. That was like running away. Right. So they were good about that.
So you had a lot of responsibility in a way.
I took it on. I don't think they gave it to me. You know,
but you also had freedom. And
yeah.
When you went out the window.
No, I didn't have freedom as far as, oh no, I had to sneak out that window.
I understand.
If I was busted, trouble in River City. Yeah.
And where'd you go to meet boys? Or meet your friends or hang out. Or
smoke. We had to go someplace to smoke, you know? Yeah. And or we'd sit in a van and talk about stuff, you know, or in a parking lot or on the curb. I was just away. I was out, you know? Right. Yeah.
All right. So you never really ran away from home. That's not a good question for you. That's okay. You know, not all the questions work.
Maybe I caused people to run away from home instead of running away myself.
Caused your mom to run away from home. That was an early win.
I think she's old enough. Let's go.
An early win. Here's a question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
You know what, Denzel? I did not have an imaginary friend as a child. I'm trying to think. Did I or didn't I? Gosh, maybe I did.
We had all these voices.
Yeah. I didn't really need an imaginary friend. It was pretty much me and makeup and dress up, makeup, play. So I don't think I had an imaginary friend. I would know, because I would put a voice to the stuffed animal, to the shirt. I think I put a name to it.
A shirt.
A voice to a shirt once. Oh, it was just always hanging
candy
there.
Bar, you know.
It was things, advisors. Things my little advisors. Yeah.
Well, no, but that counts for me. I mean.
And my dog. My dog, Tara, was my confidant. Okay. And so we would sit on the porch. That was where I went. And I would sit there, and then Tara would poke his nose, as some dogs do, right through the back of your arm, sneaking in.
Your armpit, yeah.
Your armpit. It was the best. It was like, I'm with you, you know? Because a lot of times I needed counsel, but there wasn't counsel. So Tara was just counsel for me talking to myself.
And did you have a voice or a way to talk to Tara that was different than you talk to people or other people?
I didn't have to talk. Really, I mean, it was kind of
just being there together.
Yeah, just kind of being there. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
There's a. I have a training also as a life coach. there's a way of looking at your psyche that says exactly what you mentioned, that all these voices in your head is like a board of directors.
Right.
And, you know, you're the captain of the ship, you're the CEO, or the chairman of the chairperson of the board. You're the chair, but you have all these voices that have things to say, and they are there to advise you. And, you know, sometimes they speak out things that are the soft, weakest parts of us.
Sure.
And sometimes they speak things that are the strongest parts of us. But, yeah, I've worked with people to help them identify the voices in their head.
Right, right.
To understand what are they saying to you, when do they come up, how can you pay more attention to them.
Okay, so.
Because they have some stuff for you.
I absolutely agree 100%. In fact, years back, I was listening to a radio show, and a man named Richard Lamb was talking, and he was talking about the voices in your head. And I thought it's like, and he was talking about the voices in your head being just what you're saying. Maybe this is the voice of anger, this is the voice of reason, this is the voice of, and wherever they come from, whether they come from a teacher or just a passing by, or maybe the television, who knows, they're yours. And you've allowed them to come up to help you. And so I liken that to a symphony, because this happens for me pretty much on a daily basis, where I would get in, you know, I would look in the mirror and I would hear this symphony, like the tuba was always constant. You're shit, you're no good, we don't like you, you're ugly. Yeah. And then as I got older, I had like the flutes, you know, like the violin. We think you're good, you're really swell. And the little flute would be, but the tuba would like, you're shit, you're no good. It would drown it out. So in the morning, I would give myself this job of waking up and moving all the percussions and the tubas and the big horns back, and moving the strings and the flute and everything up so that I could get this balanced view, so I could go out into the world. And even though that tuba was constant, it was just there. And it was just kind of like, okay, you can play, but you have to be in the back. And so if I would do a performance or whatever, I would always sit back before and just tell all those voices, when in the sense of instruments, you know, or the critic, the tuba was the critic, you know, and the flute was whatever. And I would just say to the critic, hey, you have to stay here, and I'm going to come back. You can, and we're going to all go home together, but you have to stay here. So, yeah. And so that I could go on. So I found that so maybe those were all my imaginary.
Yeah. No, I think that's really
accurate. They were helpful.
There's a book that a guy wrote called What Color Is Your Gremlin? He's a psychologist, and it's not a new book, but all of his work that he talks about in the book is working with his clients in this way, because these voices are there, but they're not fully conscious, but we hear them and we keep pushing them in the back.
Yeah.
And, but they really influence us. And so his work was to help people, like I said, pay attention to these voices, understand what they're saying, look at them as characters, and even to draw the creature that some of these might be,
sure.
You know, start with the tubas, because that's the one that's the strongest one. It's telling your shit.
Right.
Yeah, you already have an image. You have that it's a horn section.
Right, right.
So, so his work is that. Once you identify these voices and you start to welcome them in and you get more clear about them, now you can say, what do you have to say about this situation? What does the flute section have to say about this situation? And you can manage this group,
yeah,
like you're doing as the conductor, instead of just being kind of victimized by your subconscious or semi-conscious thoughts saying your shit all the time.
Yeah, and absolutely. And yeah. I think the tuba has a responsibility to keep your ego in check, to keep, hey, you know, what are you thinking of as the brotherhood of man here, you know? And so that's helpful. But the tuba isn't the first thing anymore, you know?
Right,
so
right.
It's kind of nice.
I really love that you say that, let's do that. There's wisdom in what the tuba is saying.
Yeah.
There is wisdom there.
Yes.
Even though it feels like it feels bad, it's trying to protect you, you know, it's an old part of you, whatever your story is that you make up. Pay more attention to these voices and use them. Yeah,
yeah,
Chester
absolutely
is just sleeping right next to you. Right? He's laying on the floor.
I want Chester to come home with me.
He's a cute dog.
He might
be willing to do that.
He's so cute.
Are you ready for another question?
Sure, fire away.
How are we doing so far?
How are we doing so far?
Well, I mean,
it's okay. I feel like you are wonderful.
You having a nice time on the show?
Yeah, you're so easy. I mean, I expected to, you know,
expected me to be an asshole.
No.
Partly because I'm from Philadelphia.
No.
It's all right. You can say it.
No, I like people from Philadelphia. I love the East Coast.
You're the only one.
I do.
People
Stop.
From Philadelphia
That's not
don't
true.
Even like people from Philadelphia.
Come on. That's not true.
It probably is, but they're proud of that. Okay. I have a theory that all people have some kind of a superpower. We mentioned this in the phone. We were talking a couple of weeks ago. And by that, I mean some energy or quality that wants to just come through you into the world. You don't have to try. It wasn't training. All you need to do is like get out of the way and let this thing come through you.
Right.
Do you have any sense of what that is for you? A time when you just feel most natural, most alive, that everything is easy.
You know, really, I think it's just going about my day with nothing in front, just kind of taking life as it comes to you on a second by second. And therefore I fall into communications with people, not always a conversation, just a look where I'm in the groove. I know I'm online. I'm online instead of offline.
What does that mean when you know you're online? How do you know?
In other words, it's kind of like it's just like you're on your network. Now it's like, can you get on the internet? I'm on. Where I feel a certain fluidity in my being, a certain fluidity, whereas nothing is hardened, where I'm grounded but fluid.
And this comes up when you're dealing with other people, working with other people.
Sometimes it comes up like walking in the park. I think there's a certain, Am I answering the right question is what I'm asking. You said, do you feel a superpower that kind of comes through you?
Maybe you don't know what it is.
Super energy. And
maybe you're not sure.
I think it's, first off, when I'm in nature, that's the most powerful. I feel that I am 100%, whereas it's kind of like have you ever been to Hawaii? Okay, so have you been into the water in Hawaii and you notice that in Hawaii, the air is the same temperature as your body, is the same temperature as the water. There's no abruptness, okay? So when I am out in nature and I'm walking and I'm breathing and I'm noticing everything, there's no abruptness. So there's this flow of, I'm just a vessel kind of walking. Mm-hmm. That feels awesome because then I have a sense that I have a sense of the bigness that the universe is and not the smallness that the news, my life, is.
Yes.
And that makes me, then I'm online. I'm online with everything. So it doesn't matter if a fire truck pulls up and there's a fire, for some reason I'm still moving with nature. And that's kind of a awesome feeling.
So that's a moment.
Awesome. That's a moment that I have.
So I'm not sure if that's the answer to my question, but that
is
cool that that happens. When we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you said something about an elf. You mentioned
my little elf that goes with me. Oh, do I have an angel? Is that what you mean by superpower? Do you have like an angel on your shoulder or whatever?
Tell us about the little elf.
I can just hear this back right now. So that was, she was a crazy person that you had when you showed the other day, Denzel. Do you have it? Is she hiding somewhere in a closet with that little elf?
No, they're going to say, where'd you find her?
Where'd you find her?
That guest, I listened to the show last week. Where'd you find her?
So, okay. the elf. Yeah, I don't really have a name for the elf or anything. I just sometimes feel that... Actually, you said little elf, and I think it probably was right. I sometimes think I have an angel on my shoulder. Not a real angel, just something that follows me that allows me not to have a parking space always but that just tempers my life a little. because I can tend to go, as in the dark comedy podcast, I can tend to go dark fast, easy. That critic can come in and I can get depressed in a moment's notice, without a moment's notice. And so then you get this cloud covering you. Well, so I find that I guess I have this little elf, this little sparkling thing that says no matter how bad it is, it's not that bad. And no matter how good it is, you better enjoy this right this second. Don't think about because it's going to be shit later.
It's not that
good. Just enjoy. Yeah, it's only life, Lori. It's just life. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just life. So the little elf or whatever kind of goes through, and I do feel that I'm very, very fortunate. And I've had a lot of unfortunate things happen, but right this very second, it's pretty good. It's nice. The air's in here. It's nice. Got this beautiful dog right here. It's a wonderful person I've just met. You know, it is as dark as it could be, and it might be. It's as much light. And I just choose to look at that lightness. And therefore, the elf and the sparkles and the little things help me look at the light. The other day, I went to the Hollywood Bowl, and I didn't have anything to wear, and I was so upset. Not that I didn't have nothing, but you know, you go to the Hollywood Bowl, here's your chance to wear something that no one else.
Turn it out, yes.
Yeah, and you can never wear anywhere else. And it was, you know, it was like a disco thing. I didn't have anything disco because I cleaned my closet a little too early. I threw everything out.
30 years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I had nothing left but things I hate. And so dressed under the guise of things I love, which was really depressing. So I just took a little, thanks to the elf and a little sparkle, I heard this, well, put a little sparkle in. So I went, got a little sparkled eyeshadow, and I put it on, and I threw some of the glitter stuff in my hair, and I had the best time, okay? Was I dressed the part? I didn't care. I had the best time. And you know what? Somebody said, I love the sparkles in your hair. Thanks to the elf.
Thanks to the elf.
Yeah.
So you did say, you said not really a guardian angel. Don't qualify it. Let it be.
Okay.
Let it be a guardian. You have a little guardian angel or a little elf that is there to help you out.
Well, see, now that's why I need a life coach. Thank you.
You don't need a life coach. I mean, you can have one.
But your life coach just jumped out to help me.
Well, when people say, I want more of this, but I don't think I could really have it, that's like a red flag to me.
Yeah.
When you say, oh, I have a thing on my shoulder, it's not really an angel, but it kind of, I'm like, yeah, let it be an angel.
Yeah, let it be an angel. Exactly. So an elf. And after I talked with you that day, I was like, God, I started to kind of like, you know, think, yeah, I think he could follow me around, that little elf.
So before you mentioned it to me, I don't know how it came up in our conversation. You hadn't really thought about him in that same way. The conversation helped make him more solid.
Yeah, I think it did, because actually I outed myself that there wasn't even any, you know.
No, we had never met, and all of a sudden you're telling me you have a little elf that follows you.
Yeah.
Around.
Well, yeah, that's another
No, you didn't
thing.
Really need to do that.
No, I didn't.
But he wanted to.
But you see.
He wanted to have something to say.
And not only that, look what, we had a whole different energy because I said that.
Yes.
If I would have kept closed. Like, we're people. The only thing we have in common is each other, okay? We don't have that much in common with the computer. It just, I don't. The computer just has so much more going for it. You know?
It's sexier, more popular, more friends.
It's sleek, it's streamlined, exactly. Yeah. It doesn't eat much. It doesn't crave. And, you know, so it's kind of like, yeah, yeah. And absolutely. But it also has no warm and fuzzy at all. Nothing. Even on the screen. So it's not, you know, we're like the only organic things left, us and the plants. And I'm very much into the plants, so, but, you know, they don't really answer back. So I think that was a vulnerable move, and, you know,
and
I'm learning that later in life, to be more vulnerable. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say that your elf, whatever part of you that is, wanted to become more solid. And that's why you said it to me. And that's why I'm asking now, because the more we talk about him or her, he or she gets more solid, more real, becomes a bigger part of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what those energies want. They want to be out in the light instead of living in the semi-darkness of our subconscious. They want to come out. They want to help you.
Yeah.
And be here for you.
You are not just an interviewer. No.
I'm also a criminal. You have a somewhat quirky bedtime or sleeping ritual. What is it?
I do? Okay.
Next question.
No, but okay. I probably do. I just have so many of them. Darn it. I was just trying to think, which one is he thinking?
Which one?
I mean, which one is he thinking?
What's the first one that comes to
mind? Bedtime ritual, okay? I mean, I do like three gratefuls. I always do that, okay? Three things I'm grateful for before I go to sleep. Okay. Three things I got. Okay. Sometimes.
Every day.
I do it is okay. Every day that I can remember. Sometimes it's I have legs.
Sure.
Okay. Sometimes it's like, I'm breathing. Okay. So it's, you know, and one more, you know. So that's one thing. What else? I don't know.
That's not too quirky.
Yeah, but darn it. What was it?
Do you have some quirky things? Maybe you don't.
No, I probably have a whole plethora. I have a quirky closet.
Nothing comes to mind. You don't know. Look,
what
I asked the question.
I go to
you
bed.
Didn't immediately
no,
get
I didn't.
Embarrassed about
three
something. So,
no, I don't. I didn't.
We're going to ring the bell again.
All right.
Okay, so the next question is this. I have this thing about pie. And 20-something years ago, I was in my neighborhood around Oakland, California, and I was asking myself, what can I really do as a single one person, little person in this vast world? What can I do really to make people happy or to bring some joy into the world? And I got this message from someplace I don't know that said, you can give permission to friends and family to hit you in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime. And at first I said, this is the dumbest thing I ever heard of. And then of course I realized it was exactly the right thing. So here's the question. You're going to do this. You're going to give permission to somebody to hit you in the face with a pie. If you could pick anyone throughout history, living or dead, real or imaginary, to hit you in the face with a pie, all love, who would you like to have throw that pie?
Wow.
First thing that comes to mind. Don't think too hard.
Okay, you know what? First thing that came to mind was Lily Tomlin.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
Yeah. How would that be for you and her?
I don't know how it would be for her. I don't know. I probably like, oh my God, really? I have to do, for what? I can see her side. Why am I, what, for what? For me, it would just be, Lily Tomlin is, she's up there very high for me. She's so brilliant, talented. And you can't really tell Lily Tomlin how brilliant and talented she is because she doesn't want to hear that anymore, okay? So if she would just throw a pie at me, it would kind of like, it would engulf so much and it would be a completeness for me. It would be so much happening for me at that very moment. It would definitely be all about me.
Yeah.
And then I would always know that there was a moment that I shared with Lily Tomlin, you know, whether she knew it or not, it was, and she would know it because she would be throwing a pie.
She would be
at
throwing a pie.
Me. Yeah. Yeah.
And it would make your life complete.
Well, I would think it was like her or Einstein. That's what I was thinking. And I thought Einstein, just because he's so amazing and everything would be relative somehow. And I would just go into my life thinking about how was that relative? How was, so that would be, you know. And Lily Tomlin, just because I thought, well, if you could have somebody in your being, in your, she would have to be there for a while. She'd have to spend at least 30 seconds mm-hmm. with me, you know?
Yeah.
There you go.
Lily Tomlin.
I know that's really, I'm probably going to go into the ground going, why did I say Lily Tomlin? There's so many more people out there. But you know what? That's what, I'm fine with Lily.
Yeah, Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a different
that's
answer.
That's it, yeah.
And it,
you and
know,
she's up there with Einstein for me.
It doesn't matter so why, but, you know, I'm yep. a little curious.
Is that? Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
You guys
I could
just
pick a relative, but why?
Out there, Lily Tomlin. Do you think she, would she say something to you before?
She would, I would, no, I'm sure she would say, she would probably take pity on me. That's what she would do. She would just go, I don't even understand this. And then she would get in the car and drive off and go have a glass of champagne or something.
So she wouldn't. She wouldn't get it. Why she was
no.
Doing
she's not absolutely. And because it'd be hard for me as well. It was something I just answered off the cuff.
But you would be happy. Okay. Well, I'm going to do one more thing on the show, which I like to do, which is to anagram things. Right.
Okay.
An anagram is when you take the letters of some word or phrase and you just rearrange them and you get other stuff. So I like to do this on the show. sometimes it is useful and entertaining, and sometimes it's not. But this one, I got this one wrong. But okay, so okay. First I anagrammed, I love a good story. Okay, before the anagrams, we're going to talk about I love a good story.
Oh, okay.
Because that's your show.
Yeah, that's my live show and podcast.
That's your live show. How often does that happen?
Well, it's you know, I just stopped doing the live show after 11 years. Wow. It was 11 years, yeah. And it was a live original music and true personal stories, 5 to 10 minutes. We did a live show every month, and then every other month, and then we podcasted it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a real passion of it. I mean, but, you know, like you said, 11 years.
The story is everything, you know. And the music, original music, in a small venue where you could sit and turn off everything electrical and digital just to be entertained for an hour. It was great fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I loved it. I'll do it again sometime, but
right. Yeah, I looked at the thing. I was like, okay, I've had 7 or 8 of those people on this show.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've recognized a whole bunch of people. Will Link also.
Yes. Will's wonderful storyteller. Guys. And yeah. I met so many great musicians, storytellers. It's just great.
There's people doing some great work around LA.
And fantastic.
Like we mentioned, people in New York and San Francisco only have crap things to say about Los Angeles. There's no culture there, all this goofy stuff. They're wrong.
Yes.
No, there's a lot of great stuff going on.
Yes.
Yeah. So I first anagrammed, I love a good story.
Okay.
And this one was out of order. It's supposed to be Sly Voodoo Triage.
Sly Voodoo Triage.
And I'm not sure what that means. Do you get any? So the thing is, do we get an image or some kind of something, or is there some way that this makes connection, Sly Voodoo Triage makes a connection with I Love a Good Story? You getting anything for that?
Well, let's see. Sly Voodoo Triage, so I rearrange the words. Okay, so a good triage is some, I love a good triage. Okay, a good story would you have to use just those words, right?
No, okay. No. These letters all rearranged to this.
And so, oh, is that what you got? Okay,
Sly
hello.
Voodoo Triage.
Oh, so Sly Voodoo Triage. Okay, so
does
here's
that have
what,
any meaning to you?
Okay, so here's what
personally?
Sly Voodoo Triage comes out for me.
Yeah,
so interesting. Okay, so voodoo is the voodoo festival to me. I went to the voodoo festival in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I saw Trombone Shorty. And he was played with three people. So this is a T, which would be
Triage.
Okay, and Triage with three people. And Sly, only because he was so sly, and later I saw him go in and play his trombone in a blues at late night in a little blues place. I never even heard of Trombone Shorty. Not only did I see him at the Voodoo Festival with this triage of people, and how he slyly walked in. And so this is interesting.
Wait, don't get into that. Oh,
okay.
One. That, yeah.
So anyway.
So that makes sense to you.
Yes, that makes sense to me.
You can find a connection.
I got
there.
Right there. Yeah.
And then when you go there, I go to, because you said Trombone Shorty and all that stuff, I go to your tuba section. Your shit.
Oh.
You suck. Anyway, I just made that connection. Didn't sound like you were doing that. But
okay.
Yeah, anyway. So that was Sly Voodoo Triage. Okay, here's something else for I Love a Good Story.
Wait, that's
this
cool.
This is Greasy Ovoid Lute. Now, ovoid, I just made sure I had to look it up to make sure I understood it. It means egg-shaped.
Egg-shaped, greasy egg-shaped.
So I was interested
lute.
In some greasy egg-shaped lute. Where could that exist, or what the heck could that possibly mean?
Wow.
You
greasy,
get anything from that?
Greasy egg-shaped lute. I'm not getting a direct hit right away.
Okay.
I'm sure if I thought about it for a while, something would come up. You know?
But that's not the game.
But it's not the game. No, I don't get anything
from
that. All
right, let's move
on. Okay.
Ring bell.
All right.
Moving on.
That was fun. Thank
no, we're
you.
Not done. There's
oh.
some more. We got.
Okay.
Yeah, you're like, oh God.
No,
great.
No,
we're
right.
done with that part. No, it's still going.
Okay. The fact that you're still smiling is pretty good.
All right. Yeah. Some things work. Some things don't.
Okay.
This one. Trying to fold the paper. I'm trying not to show you all the ones ahead of time.
Oh, okay. You don't have to.
I like to have a little suspense.
I understand.
Even on the radio, we like to have a little suspense.
Sure.
So, I love a good story. Also, anagrams to this. Ivy.
Galoots Rodeo.
Ivy Galoots Rodeo. I just thought like Ivy Galoot sounded like the name of a character that you could do.
Ivy Galoot.
And she would be the boss of this rodeo. You got anything for her?
For the boss of this rodeo?
Yeah.
So, Ivy Galoot. Is, well, oh, well, I could be Ivy Galoot. And this rodeo to some, but it's a rodeo, is my husband, Mr. Galoot,
started this way back in, well, in the 20s. And I never wanted to go down that road, but obviously it paid off because we call ourselves Galoot's Loot. And we've made a lot of loot, Mr. Galoot and I, on this rodeo. So let's stop, boys. You get on your bulls and you just ride your little ass off. Ticket, sir? Do you have a ticket?
That's what I get. That worked?
Yeah, there you go.
I just figured, I saw Ivy Galoot's Rodeo. I thought you could be her. I actually think that she would say it's rodeo.
Yeah.
Everybody else thinks it's rodeo, but she corrects them and says it's rodeo.
Yeah, I think. Well, then we could go that way. But Ivy.
That's the way I would want to go.
All right.
But, you know.
Well, that's okay. You're directing.
Okay. If I'm the director, you're the character.
It's rodeo, baby.
We're going to work it out.
Okay.
So that was good. I love a good story. Also anagrams to this. Yoga, overdue toils. Are you a yoga person?
I am.
Do you ever do a little too much in yoga?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's my religion, yoga. I love it.
Overdue toils.
Yeah, overdue toils. Exactly. Makes well, sense. That's, yeah, don't push it, baby, is what that comes up to. Okay.
Right. A little on the nose, but I figured, okay. Now,
do you do yoga?
Sometimes.
Okay.
My body likes yoga.
Yeah, mine does.
All right, here's a couple of them. I anagrammed Boris and Natasha.
Okay, wow, you were busy.
No, I did try to anagram Natasha Fatal, which is her name, but I didn't really get anything interesting, so I just skipped it. But this one, Boris and Natasha, read this first one.
Brandish a sonata.
Yeah, I was curious.
Brandish.
They have a lot of weapons and things, and maybe you could use a sonata as a weapon, brandishing a sword, brandishing
That's
a sonata.
That's great. Yes.
Could you imagine them brandishing a sonata?
Boris, bring the sonata. Quick, quick. Moose and Squirrel, coming, quick. Oh, I don't know. Why did I marry you? Why? Anyway.
Are they married?
No.
Boris and Natasha?
No, they're just together.
I wasn't sure. I had really, there's one more question.
Well, no, it might be Boris and Natasha. I think they might be married.
Okay.
Married, yes. Yeah.
I never really knew why Moose and Squirrel must die.
Because someone has to, Boris. They stop us from doing everything.
Is there a reason? That they just get in the
way. I tried, yes.
Moose and Squirrel must die.
Moose and Squirrel must die, yes. Of course.
I also,
they're always in the way.
I liked brandishing a sonata because I had a whole story about a certain time when I was kind of drunk and I was goofing around with a friend and I just wouldn't stop. And to stop me in my tracks, he put on a Bela Bartok string concerto. And somehow that string concerto completely disoriented me and really kind of knocked me out in a way.
Wow.
And so I have been rendered unconscious by a string concerto.
Wow.
And so I figured you could brandish a sonata in a similar way.
Yes. That's armed. Wow.
So for my friend Dave Koza, who rendered me unconscious with this Bela Bartok string concerto, I would suggest that he might try his hand at brandishing a sonata.
A sonata.
If he's got his kids or, you know, not going to sleep on time.
Yeah, that's it. Just knock him out cold with a concerto.
Yeah. Or a sonata, yeah.
Or a sonata, right.
Yeah. Natasha and Boris. Boris and Natasha also anagrams to this.
Handed abrasions. Well, I think they're constantly have their hand in abrasions.
Right, that's
yes,
what doing,
that's what
right?
they're doing
they
all the
are
time.
Hand in hand.
Exactly.
In creating
abrasions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that
was really interesting.
Right on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have a couple more.
Wow.
This is you, Lori Fraser.
Ah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, you recognize yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What's this first one?
Airfare slur.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, well, that's what's happening right now. It's
airfare.
Just an.
Do you have any, are you an irate?
It could be in front of a nightmare. Oh, yes. I've been canceled and put in, you know, they let us know at the last minute, you know, instead of Uber, how about a cancellation? What? You know, yeah, airfare slur. Oh, I think it's just what's happening.
That's
it's very topical.
So that's very topical.
Sure.
Lori Fraser also anagrams to this.
Really? Safari ruler.
Is that? That's.
Well.
Mm. Are you a Leo? You seem like a Leo the lion.
No, but I have a moon in Leo.
Okay.
And I'm not a Leo. But I like Leos and lions. Safari ruler, I mean, that's kind of, I don't think. I think of a safari ruler. That's kind of funny. Is there anybody that rules a safari except for maybe a lion? And he's definitely not taking you on a safari, right? So, yeah. So I think that's kind of what do you call it? Oxymoron, isn't that what it is? Safari ruler.
Yeah. And this one, I said, I don't know.
Alas, Furrier.
Do you have any? I thought this one might work if you had any former pets that had died that you just couldn't let go of, and so you had them stuffed.
There's my dog, Chester.
Alas, he's been to the furrier.
And see, I was thinking, I want a dog, but alas, something furrier than that little short-haired thing.
So you went someplace else.
A little furrier.
Alas, you want something more furry.
Yeah.
Well, these are just kind of like, you know.
Yeah.
These are just shots in the dark.
Yeah, I like that.
You're like, yeah, okay. But we haven't found one that really like hit home, I think.
Okay. All right.
What is this one?
Surreal Fair.
Now this... Yeah. Storytelling, surreal fair.
Yeah, childhood, raising. This reminds me of a trip I took into the Amazon, into Peru, and where I went on a little trip across the Amazon at 8 o'clock at night in a boat, and I got a message in the Amazon that life is a circus, just pick a ring. And so that reminds me of Surreal Fair. It was kind of a ring. It's like, in other words, you weren't here to do something. Just pick something, because you're here.
Yeah, you're here.
Don't wait for that, I just don't know what I'm here to do. Just pick something. And if it's not what you're here to do, you'll be guided somewhere else until you drop in, like you said, and you're online, and you're like that thing that you were talking about earlier, yes. That power, and then you will feel, and that, there you go. You pick the right thing now.
I believe in that. I do. You know, people who say, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up, or if you begin something, that's way better than trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and life is a surreal fair. That's pretty much, okay. Yeah.
So that one's good for you.
Yeah.
Surreal fair.
Surreal
and
fair.
And fair is F-A-I-R, so yes. It's like a country, county fair. This one I don't want to leave that.
Okay, never.
But this one is another character. I thought that this could be you. Sierra
LaFleur. Sierra LaFleur.
What do you get from her?
Let's see. Wow, Sierra LaFleur. She's so... Really, she was... I was thinking a long time ago about my life in the Sierras. That's why I'm called Sierra LaFleur, because I was born in the Sierras among the flowers. There were so many flowers when I was born. They could not find me. I disappeared. My mom went into the field. She had me in the flowers, in the Sierras. And then spent the next hour trying to find me. No wonder, you know, that I have a hard time sometimes, you know, seeing the forest through the trees, so to speak. But she called me Sierra LaFleur, her little flower, her flower. That is all I have for you.
I like that image. You know, I got, when you were lost for a short time as an infant, maybe you weren't lost. Maybe the fairies, the sprites of the field, of the forest took you, you know, and
said, when you come down to the earth, you will be something special. But don't wait until you know exactly what that is. Just start something, okay?
Just get started. We'll let you know. So the ones that, any of these that, you know, so none of these sounds like really felt like, oh, that's me. I mean, some of them made more sense.
Maybe
than
they're
other
like
ones.
A little bit of everything of me, you know.
No,
who knows? Yeah.
It's a game. Sometimes.
I love the game, you know.
Sometimes we find one and somebody says, oh, that, I'm going to put that on a T-shirt. The fact that you took my name also could do this.
Okay, so. That's cool. I think I'd do that. And I like Sierra LaFleur. I think I might create a character from her.
Okay.
She might be really good. In fact, lost to the flowers for a long time. Oh, the panties gave me this. The glads give me this.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Right?
And yeah, I just might do that.
She
might,
yeah. She got things from the
energy. And you know what? Oh my gosh, you just realized. Well, I blend essential oils. I'm really into the plant spirits. Aha, give me the pencil. I will circle Sierra Le Fleur. And I will make a blend called Sierra Le Fleur. It would be a perfume.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Au revoir.
All right, I'm going to.
Merci.
All
right. Okay.
All right, then that's good. Okay. And we got something useful.
Okay, there.
I'm going to ring now. I'm going to ring the bell next time. Okay. I like it. We're kind of running out of time.
Done, okay.
But
yeah.
We could end here, but I kind of also wanted to just ask one more thing.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to go to clown school a long time ago. I wanted I thought that would be a good fit for me. And then they said, you have to travel on the train to Florida. You have to live in the bunk or whatever. And then they told me about, and I crossed them, which is what I'm still doing right now, that when you get to Florida, do you know about the roaches? They can fly. And they were, and I had this vision of like being in a small area, kind of like the porch, okay, but then that crossed over with the train and the heat from the train and you're smashing the train. And I guess I talked to the wrong person that just gave me this picture of, oh my God, I could never do it. I couldn't do that. So I can't go to Florida because of the roaches and the flying. I've been to Florida since then. I haven't seen any, okay?
So that's what stopped you from going to clown school?
Well,
is the story of flying
the story
roaches?
Of the train and the roach, and also the fact that I think there was a comment, you'll never get in clown school. So I thought, God, because I thought I'd be a pretty good clown. And then, the thing was with clowns was that I collected clowns, but I didn't ever intend to. I had one Pyrrho clown that was this really neat Pyrrho clown. And the next thing I knew, a friend bought me a clown. And they go, well, because of clowns. And then another person saw those clowns and bought me another clown. Until pretty soon, the clown thing was, I had a case made for all the things. And the Pyrrhos and the things, and they hung. And they, you know, until one day, I realized that, I never forget, a Chinese doctor came over, Dr. Zhu. He came over, who always said, I don't know if I can help. I try, but I don't know if I can help. He was a Chinese guy that was like four generations passed down, and he'd come over to your house for $200 and cash, and he'd go into the living room, and he would, and he would heal you. He was a fantastic guy. He knew the meridians and the energy. Well, he would sit in my living room next to the clown case, and he said to me once, "Oh, you make you too busy. Your energy putting into the bank deposit, it withdraw, but no deposit." He said, looks over at the clown case. I'm sure he was looking over. I was, you know, just being quiet while he held the points in my back, which always had me drifting off to sleep in about 30 seconds. He's pretty smart. He did that really soon after when he first started. But he said, maybe you will not be hairdresser or actress. No, you maybe have a clown store.
Clown store.
A clown store. So.
Did you ever have the clown store?
No. As a matter of fact.
Do you dream of it sometimes?
Not even close. Not even a little bit close. But he had a point as far as slowing down, not being so busy. And I decided to start with the clowns and that I donated, sold, gave away, and I kept one little.
How many did you have at the height of your...
I had, I don't know, 100 or something.
100 different ceramic kinds of stuffed ones.
Stuff that hung on a, you know, silk stuff that hung. And everything. I got out of the magnets and stuff like that. Nope. You can't have like pictures and things. No.
Yeah, it had to be. Limits.
Now, I still have two pictures. One that a French artist... a French artist, and now it's Toulouse, not Lautrec, but it was Toulouse something. He painted these amazing clown pictures.
Toulouse Rabinowitz, yeah.
Maybe. No, it wasn't. He was a French guy. But he painted on French newspaper. And when I worked, I was in Beverly Hills for quite a few, still there for decades, hairdressing. And he had painted this. You bought the artwork from him. It was still wet. And it was amazing. And he bought, he, you know, he did it for money. I mean, just because he needed to make money. He was an artist. And I bought two paintings. I think they were $25 each. And I remember thinking that was so much money to me because I was in my 20s and it was, oh, that was a long time ago, Denzel.
And it was clowns. And so this thing about you were collecting clowns, how long did it last?
I still love those pictures.
How long?
It lasted about probably 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
20 years longer than I would ever thought I would have wanted to. But
so,
I figured,
you know. So you didn't really choose it. It just kind of showed up. People started giving them, sending them all. And at some point you had to get off the clown wagon.
Yeah.
Get out of the clown car.
But you see, nothing ever comes to you without giving you something. There's an opportunity from everything
so what,
that comes
did you
to
learn
you.
Learn
so yeah, I learned.
Something?
Yeah, I learned. Well, I learned. Of course, the comedian always is the clown is always, for the most part, hiding a certain amount of sadness himself. Doesn't let himself out. Doesn't present herself to the world. Only with a mask. Only with painted face, and then that's the license to be out, and in front of the audience that then sees whatever the clowns put out, and the audience feeds the clown. And that's a wonderful thing because the clown gets fed in this roundabout sort of way, but still goes home and has to take off the mask. So, you know, it's that I learned that, and just about how we live in color.
Yeah.
Not black and white, we live in color.
We live in color?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we live in color, not black and white. We live in shades of gray, not black and white. And so, although shades of gray isn't color, it's still, we have this
gradients. It's not all clear.
It's never, and even in clarity, it's still colored. So, nothing should be so yes, no, yes, no.
And so now we're out of time.
Okay.
That's totally
that's okay.
fine.
That's okay.
I would like to thank you, my special guest, the verbally acrobatic Laurie Fraser. Coming in this week.
Denzel Myers.
Now, if you or anyone listening would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. So far, no one has purchased a mug. I mean, I have one, but...
I think a mug sounds good.
Yeah. Well, they're $20, which is kind of expensive for a mug.
Right.
You know, you get them custom printed and they ship them from someplace.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's true.
But they're out there. And the other thing is I try to take a picture of it to show people, but because it's a mug and the thing wraps around, it never looks good in the photo.
Gosh.
It's much better live in person. Yeah.
I understand.
We have theme music, which you haven't heard, but you'll hear it when you listen. You're going to listen to your episode, right?
Yes, I am going to listen
to
it.
Ring the bell. Do it with... Yeah,
I love the bell. Yes, I'm going to listen. Okay. Why not? You know, I put it on in the car.
Might as well, right? Yeah. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel.
I'm going to remember that when I listen. Dean Mermel.
It's going to be Dean Mermel. If you have been listening up till now, you have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. Although we're in Pasadena, but it's close.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Laurie. And
thank
we
you.
Will be back next week.